First of all, I'd just like to acknowledge the land that we're meeting on today is the traditional lands of the Kaurna people, and we acknowledge their spiritual and real link to the lands. The second thing is that I'll make it quite clear that I'm not here speaking for Aboriginal people, but what I can do is give a perspective of a region which has got a predominantly Aboriginal community that's living in it and looking after those lands, along with a number of Dena locations. I'll just give you an overview of the region. It covers about 23% of the state, and it's up in the northwest. That's what Alanjara Willyara actually means in Pitjantjatjara, which means northwest, so that's how we've got our name. So we're 23% of the state. Most of the communities are actually up in the Northern Territory, Western Australia border area, as you can see there. Over half the area is held as dedicated Aboriginal lands. We've got the Yalata, Maralinga Jaratja in the southern areas, and Ananew Pitjantjatjara, Yankajara in the APY lands, which is in the more northern area. And we've got the Kukunamula people who actually do a fair bit of work over in some of the Dena areas over onto the eastern location. One of the things that we do have probably is more camels and donkeys than people. In fact, we probably have more camels in our area with the Western Australia and the Northern Territory than we have people in Adelaide. And so that's a bit of a perspective on some of the issues that we have. We've put together our regional plan, for the board's regional plan, based on people, country and water. And in terms of what we're trying to get through today, this is all the philosophy or the direction we're looking at with people. And really what I think we'd be looking for out of the research and the directions is support and information on issues like climate, so these communities can make decisions on their own futures. So how do we actually provide information that helps them make those long-term decisions? In terms of country, we need to know what are the risks and where to invest. Some of the work that Barry's been doing, Mark did a bit in terms of camels, where do they move? You know, Corey's been doing some work as well in that sort of area. How do we actually bring all of this together so we've got some ideas about what are the risks, where should we invest, and climate is part of that whole mix. In terms of water, we've got two sorts of water basically, but most of the potable water is in the shallow aquifers. So what effect will climate change have on that supply of water, particularly as the communities want to go to more of their own industry development, and in some cases that may be cattle, which then uses the water, what's available there for people in the communities, and then what's the impact that you have with mining, which is another big industry that's starting to be looked at in the area and is already there in a number of places, and their drawdown on different water supplies. Does that affect some of the others? And then what's the overall effect then of things like climate change on that? With the surface waters, they have their own ecology and cultural identity and significance. So what are the climatic effects on those? Will the changes that we've heard about, possibly in rain, have an effect on that? And in terms of when people do their business in the lands, how's that all link in as, you know, as an important area? What will be the feral species impact if we get a change because the climate's changed and it means that there's more coming down into the area, or there's a change in the way that they work? How does that actually affect all of these issues together? So that's the sort of things that we really need, is some base information for people to be able to make decisions. I could go through all of these major threats, but I think they're probably usual across a number of areas, but in ours it's really a lack of knowledge that we have. And over the top of all of that, I suppose one of the key ones I could look at there is invasion of existing or new weeds, buffel grass. We've got it in the northern one third. It's just starting to come into the second two thirds. We're putting a major effort into trying to keep it out of that bottom area. We know what some of the spread vectors are. We know where we're actually trying to target programs. But what's climate going to do? Are we wasting our time? Or, you know, do we need to start thinking about, is there other ways of dealing with this issue? Do we start to need to look at it? We're trying to look at it. Do we look from a state perspective? This is a national, you know, something of major significance that we need to have put up on a listing. Will we get anywhere? Maybe not, because other regions see that as, and quite rightly so, as a pastoral species that might be of use. And so, you know, these are a number of issues that we've really got to start looking at, because that does change the ecology very dramatically for our region, as we know already from the Northern Territory. And what's the big thing that affects all of these? What we're here about, climate change. Now, we've got the CSIRO predictions, and we've seen a number of these before, rainfall and temperature. I think that some of the things that sort of Leslie put up, if you, her map would show Western Australia is an increase in the rainfall. Well, are we getting more rain up in the north-west corner of our region more than what the predicting models are saying at the moment? I don't know. Or is that just a seasonal variation with the El Nino and the La Nina effects? These are things that, you know, that does impact on how we go about the programs that we have in the region. So some of the work that's been done, there's been a review and modelling suggesting that geology, fire, land practices and invasive species all interact to drive diversity. Well, that's nothing new. It's good to put it together. Shifts in rainfall or temperature may affect land management practices or fire regimes, which will drive the components of additive diversity. And research is required to collate species data along with site-specific measures of slope about elevation, aspect, fire history and feral densities and possible links to climate. So these are things that Barry et al. Have done some work for us on. But we still need to look at the socio-economic impacts of this. We've talked about biodiversity today. Without the communities there to actually do some of the work and look after things, it's not really going to have any benefit. So I think somewhere in that mix that we've got, we really need to be saying, how does this all link together? I'll just do a bit of a case study Barry talked about before. This is from work that he's done with other people. This is the Waru. If you say Waru, that's fire. Waru is the black-flanked wallaby. So even then you've got sort of connections. So this is just some of the overview about it. I won't go into that too much. This is basically some distribution. We've already seen the map. Just some of the works in modelling is saying, well, if you've just got it as it is, baseline population, you've started this number of individuals, no predation or drought, then, you know, this might be where you keep going. So you get some of the problems that Mark's talked about in breeding and the rest of it, and then you've got a whole lot of other issues. But if we just go with that as a base model, then if we start to see that climate change brings in more drought programs, more drought into the system, then you're starting to decrease your numbers. Then if we bring in other things like feral foxes, overeating of the habitat area, fire regimes change, we end up with buffer grass, which may not be a palatable species, coming in and taking over the whole ecosystem, then you've got another added effect. When you put on top of that, that it's confined to the rocky terrain, where do we invest? Where do we put our time and effort? Does South Australia keep putting time and effort into this, or do we say we're better off to put it somewhere else? So do we look at this from a national perspective? Do we look at it from a state? But it's also an iconic species for the community. But we don't want to be dealing with iconic species from the community if in 5 years' time, all the work they've put in is going to end up with that species not being there. So, these are some of the things that we really need to be starting to look at in terms of where do we invest our time and effort. Because we don't want to lose both these out of the system. We're starting to lose both. This is Jilby Robin. And we are finding that a lot of the traditional knowledge is getting lost. We had over 12 senior people die from one of the communities last year. And so that's a lot of knowledge that's gone. So how do we actually try and keep that knowledge as well as looking after the ecosystems? So other initiatives that we're doing at the moment, now I really acknowledge Brian and the work that's been done on Eyre Peninsula in terms of some of the things that, regional perspective, that's a much better area in terms of that overall regional perspective. But we're looking at what we can do with the funding we've got. So we're redoing and extending the Nullarbor survey, which was done over 25 years ago, to investigate any changes that may be going to decline. So we're trying to see, is there been some changes? We've done a number of these biosurveys, but there's not that many that have really been there for that long that you can go back and have another look. We're developing, and Doug Barson's here, a community with the community's original climate strategy. We're monitoring the coastal Nullarbor Daisy as a climate change indicator because of its coastal locations. We've established with Denner monitoring sites in the Alta coastal wetlands as indicators of climate change, and we're looking towards further modelling. One of the things that we've done is try to work with the Bureau of Mineralogy to increase the number of stations within our region so we can get better data. How do we link that to Western Australia? Don't know. We haven't really looked at that. We're looking at long-term data. Our marine officer said, we've got over 20 years of whale data. Is there some links there that start to look at, is there some impacts from the marine area in terms of climate change that may be affecting our region? So it's how can we best use this and the knowledge that's in sort of this room and other rooms to try and pull us together to help us inform where's the best place to invest. So climate change will impact on people, country and water. What we're trying to look at is what may be the changes and how rapid is what the community want to know, and in a way that's relevant and understandable. You've got to be very careful that what's provided is something that people understand. This is something that's been brought up by our board, and I think it's a good way to put things, is value Aboriginal science in decision making. So we've got our contemporary science, let's look at the Aboriginal science and where that's brought into it rather than just calling it traditional knowledge. And on this information, people can make investment decisions and where they want to live and in NRM. And I just want to thank those people for the information that I've used. Oh, sorry. The other things that I just said after I was thinking as we were going along was how do we promote Aboriginal people in undertaking research in this area? I mean, I think there's very few people who are PhD students in research, and this would be a very applicable area, I think. So it's how does the group organise that? After I heard about it, and it's my lack of knowledge, the Indigenous Community Research Plan, I found out, is still to be written. And so we need to quarantine some funding, or we'll have a plan, but no way to implement it. So that's just some thoughts from me. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Neil.